Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Desperate political times call for desperate primetime speeches, and that's what you got from Mr. 10%, the big guy, President Biden, last night, doing his best to connect the attack on Paul Pelosi to January 6th to the Republican Party.
To voter suppression.
It's hard to even say. After the assailant entered the home asking, where's Nancy? Where's Nancy? Those are the very same words used by the mob when they stormed the United States Capitol on January the 6th, when they broke windows, kicked in the doors, brutally attacked law enforcement, roamed the corridors hunting for officials, and erected gallows to hang the former Vice President Mike Pence. It was an enraged mob that had been whipped up into a frenzy by a president repeating over and over again the big lie.
Yeah, we're going to see if we can run on Jan 6th and Trump and gaslight you about political violence. Where's Nancy on January 6th to where's Nancy at the Pelosi home in Pacific Heights, San Francisco, by some deranged dude who...
I kept thinking the whole time, if Pelosi's husband wasn't attacked, would he even be standing up there? I mean, that gave him the reason to get up there. And he's at Union Station, which, by the way, every single, and I mean the only thing left there was Starbucks, every single shop there closed because of high crime. There's nothing. It's all boarded up. Would he even have the press conference last night? And thank God the cable stations covered it, not mainstream.
Oh, he was going to do that speech.
Regardless if Paul Pelosi was attacked.
Of course. But the entire message of the Dem Socialists this cycle is threat to democracy. Threat to democracy, democracy's at stake, so on and so forth. They're trying to disenfranchise people. And I mean, this is the whole thing. They can't talk about any substantive issues that relate to people's personal safety or economic security. So they're left with this, and Paul Pelosi's attack, the attack on Paul Pelosi, just gives him, you know, sort of one more line that some speechwriter can fold into the larger message. But the message hasn't changed, and it's not going to change.
Yeah, it's the same thing that he said on September 1st. Remember when he was in Philadelphia and with the red lights behind him and the two Marines? You know, that President Trump is bad, MAGA Republicans bad.
The extreme MAGA element of the Republican Party, which is a minority of that party, as I said earlier, but it's this driving force. It's trying to succeed where they failed in 2020. To suppress the right of voters and subvert the electoral system itself.
What vote is being suppressed?
I don't know. I mean, you know, this is the detail you're not going to get, because this is just accusations that are strung together that don't need any evidentiary support, because they just get amplified by the same cable news networks who covered the speech, for example, your fungible analyst on CNN.
Dan Rather, the legendary journalist, has a metaphor that I love. He says, climate change did not create hurricanes, but it made them much worse. And it's the same with political violence. Political violence has always existed on all sides of the political spectrum, but today's political climate is making it much worse, and it is a uniquely right-wing problem right now. We cannot both sides this, given what we've seen in the last few years.
Well, first of all, Dan Rather is not a legendary journalist. Secondly, hurricanes are not getting more intense. And thirdly, it's a nice strikeout. Your third strike is, no, of course, political violence is not the repository of the right. And to suggest otherwise is just to ignore the political violence recently. Forget historically, just recently, for example, the incident that nobody talks about in the context of the Paul Pelosi attack, except we do. I don't even hear Republicans bringing it up. Maybe they need to be reintroduced to Rand Paul. The attack of a sitting senator at his home,
where he cracked his ribs.
It'd take out a portion of his lung, one of his lungs. I mean, okay. And also, by the way, here at home,
Darren
Bailey,
some
21-year-old goofball was arrested and released on $75,000 bail. By the way, that would not happen under the Safety Act. When did I stop beating my ex-girlfriend, Chris Welch, the House Speaker, saying under the Safety Act, this individual would have been detained rather than being able to post $7,500 to walk, $75,000 bail. It's just the opposite. Intimidating, threatening a public official is a non-detainable offense under the Safety Act. But, of course, this is what you're getting from the left generally. So you had some 21-year-old guy make all sorts of threats against Darren Bailey.
Yeah, he left a voicemail message, excuse me, at his office in Springfield and then another place where he basically said he wanted to skin him alive and feed him to his family. And at first, the Secretary of State's office investigating, they said nothing. There was nothing there. And then State
Secretary
Police.
State's office.
Not Secretary of State's. Oh, my God. I can't. Hold on one second. The first group that investigated, they said he was fine. And then State Police got involved. And then they arrested him. And this all started because he was at a bar with his friends on Friday night. And he saw a Darren Bailey ad. And he got all upset. And then called. But when he does get out on bond, ABC 7 said he was in jail last night. But when he does get out on bond, Dan, he's going to be on electronic monitoring. Doesn't that make you feel better?
Here's high-mindedness of the left, an example of the left. Is this everybody who votes Democrat? No. No, it's not. Just like people who committed crimes on January 6th are not representative of everybody who was even there on January 6th, who went to a rally and were peaceful. People forget that. It's still a small portion of the crowds that came to the mall on January 6th to hear President Trump speak that committed any crimes. Small fraction, much less of the larger Republican Party in the country. But that's not how it's being characterized. Here's what this guy said, among other things. You mentioned the I want to skin you alive, feed you to your family.
Yeah.
Quote, I'm quoting, he's a piece of white ass, racist, blank, and honestly, if he doesn't kill himself, I will. You know what? I know where he lives. I know where he sleeps. I know where his kids sleep, and I know the effing school he works at. He also said the candidate teaching all this MFing misinformation is going to die, so honestly, he should just kill himself before anything else happens, and so on and so forth.
And I was right. Illinois Secretary of State Police did, they got that voicemail. Well, it was turned in at 10:27 October 28th, but they did investigate, and they didn't immediately deem him as a credible threat. Can you believe that? And that's when it was turned over to Illinois State Police. But they weren't even going to arrest him. Now he's a chance of bond. Bond should be denied, but not in this world.
David and Monica.
I just wanted to, I don't acknowledge you enough for doing what you guys do, so I wanted to start there. And Dan, it was because of your spirit and your courage and everything that you instilled that in me, and I don't hide anymore. I'm not afraid to be white. I'm not afraid to speak out, so thank you very much. But I wanted to say these people that are going in and doing these things, the insurrectionists and the assailant, I mean, they've all got great questions. Where is Nancy? Where is she? I mean, is she running around with Waldo? What's going on? All right, thanks so much, guys.
You know, she's in San Francisco to her husband's bedside as he recovers. But we found out more information.
Yeah, right.
Well, she was over
okay.
The weekend.
Yeah, you mean for the photo and then she left? Or
the video
how long was she at that bedside?
I don't know. She went in a few times. I saw her wearing different outfits. I don't know
where
she
is now. Yeah, exactly. You saw her going in and out.
Well,
oh, gee, yeah. That wasn't orchestrated. Look, of course, I'm sure it's a wonderful love affair they've had for how many ever years? Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Not performative at all.
Well, but the thing is, Capitol Police, they have, they installed cameras on that home 8 years ago, and they didn't see the attack, but then they saw police activity afterward. And then San Francisco police, her home alarm, we found out it was connected to, if it's tripped, San Francisco police are alerted, and the alarm wasn't on either. So.
Mark on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I think the most worrisome part of last night's speech was Biden saying that a few of the election results will not be known for days.
That's
With that being said,
it's true.
I wonder why the American people are skeptical of that. And furthermore, they send people from the CIA to Brazil months ago telling the current president who was defeated not to contest the election results. That's all I have to say.
Thanks for the call. Well, I mean, in places like Pennsylvania, that's true because they accept ballots so late. They don't start counting ballots until so late. They don't start counting absentee ballots until after the polls close. So if in a close race, it's guaranteed that Pennsylvania won't be known for a couple days.
Bull jive. I mean, he even said last night, be patient because we may not know who the winners are.
We know that more and more ballots are cast in early voting or by mail in America. We know that many states don't start counting those ballots until after the polls close on November 8th.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right.
That means in some cases we won't know the winner of the election for a few days until a few days after the election. It takes time to count all legitimate ballots.
Yeah, I know. We got it.
Yeah, but in Illinois, too, it could be 2 weeks after the election. They'll still take ballots in and count them. So if Pritzker doesn't like the results, he's like, we're still counting mail-in ballots.
Again, we'll see how close these races are. But, yes, there's no reason that barring something very anomalous like, within a few dozen or a few hundred votes, in the case of a statewide race where you potentially have millions of votes, there's no reason that you should know the results on election night. It's just
normal.
I agree. Speaking of the big guy, Mr. 10%, that guy, and his sidekick there, Reparation H, they're coming to town this weekend.
Yeah, they're going to be here separately. One's going to be here on Friday to, as they say, get out the vote with J.B. Pritzker, and just instead of saying what was really going on and that he's campaigning with J.B. Pritzker. But this is a big rally where there's going to be one on Friday, and then with the big guy, and then on Sunday with Vice President Kamala Harris. The get out the vote rally for J.B. Pritzker and the rest of the Democratic ticket.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Illinois and Chicago / Cook County, one of the few safe places that Biden and Harris still enjoy. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Just a postscript on the discussion we were having about the politically inspired violence per Mr. 10% primetime speech last night. I just caught this one. Republican New Hampshire Senate candidate Don Boldick, who's a retired Army Brigadier General, he dodged a punch last night, just as he was about to step on stage to debate the incumbent Dem in New Hampshire, Maggie Hassan. Dodged a punch. They got, this was some Libertarian Party activist, apparently. He was arrested. And by the way, libertarians and leftists, libertarian is just somebody who's not fully embraced leftism yet, but will, for the most part. There are exceptions, but that's okay. I digress. Anyway, so rhetoric. Trump's rhetoric is responsible for Paul Pelosi's the attack on Paul Pelosi. Okay, so whose rhetoric is responsible for the threats or the attacks on Darren Bailey, Don Boldick, and Lee Zeldin? This is just in the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Whose rhetoric is responsible for that?
And we're going to have Darren Bailey on later in the show, and I want to ask him too. Are they going to let him know if this thug is released? Because they are, if he does post bond, they said that they're going to put him on electronic monitoring.
All right. Well, switching gears, I want to get to this COVID amnesty debate that's happening. Again, we talked about it a little bit with Steve Moore yesterday, but this a piece by Emily Oster, who we've had on the show. She's an economist. She wrote the book Expecting Better, which was sort of a tutorial for pregnant women about all the things that people tell pregnant women to do or not do. And she sort of took aim at those things from the perspective of an economist and separated the wheat from the chaff, if you will. So she wrote this piece in The Atlantic, a call to declare pandemic amnesty. She wrote, "We have to put these fights aside and declare a pandemic amnesty. We can leave out the willful purveyors of actual misinformation while forgiving the hard calls that people had no choice but to make with imperfect knowledge. Los Angeles County closed its beaches summer of 2020. Ex post facto, this makes no more sense than my family's masked hiking trips. But we need to learn from our mistakes and then let them go. We need to forgive the attacks, too, because I thought schools should reopen and argue that kids as a group were not at high risk. I was called a teacher killer. It wasn't pleasant, but feelings were high, and I certainly don't need to dissect and rehash that time for the rest of my life. Moving on is crucial now because the pandemic created many problems that we still need to solve." What do you think? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
No, I'm not taking. I read that article. I'm not ready to forgive or forget, because guess what's happening, folks? If and when Pritzker wins, he's going to mandate vaccines for our children in order to go to school in the fall. And I know, because if he wasn't going to do it, he would come out and say, "No, I have no plans on doing that." It was, "Well, I got to study the science and the data," and the same rigmarole bull jive. So no, this is not over yet. I'm not forgiving anybody. I've been yelled out of stores. I've been, you know, and I was one of the original COVIDians, and I was vaccinated. I did everything the government asked me to do, and still, when I was watching and listening to this show and, you know, the guests that we had on and the doctors and the experts with varying opinions on this show, I changed my mind and was ridiculed all along. Even up until a few weeks ago at church, not wearing a mask. Like, you're putting other people's lives at risk. I have to see some movement from that side, and I'm not seeing anything.
Well, first of all, in order to get forgiveness, don't you have to ask for forgiveness? I don't hear anybody. I don't hear anybody asking. What I hear is some people saying, "Move on," because I don't want to obsess about, and I don't obsess about all of the ignorance and the barbaric conduct of so many COVIDians during that time, starting with those in positions of authority. I don't obsess about it, but I'm also not going to forget it, and I'm certainly not going to offer any forgiveness if I don't hear any contrition or any recognition that some of the decisions that were made were terrible decisions that made people worse off in every possible way,
financially, emotionally, mentally, physically. I mean, instead of handing out, you know, money to get vaccinations, they should have signed us up for gym memberships.
Well, the other thing too is, it's as you're sort of pointing out with the situation at your church, it's ongoing. It's not over.
Yeah, right. It's not
and
over.
So right now, as we're talking, Dr. Peter McCullough, who's he still is in rational circles, but he was widely respected in his profession as a cardiologist, internal medicine. And now his credentials are under threat from the American Board of Internal Medicine because what? Because he was outspoken during COVID bringing up issues like natural immunity that were dismissed by the Tony Faucis of the world. So now, right now, as we're talking, he may essentially lose his ability to practice medicine, not because he's not good at it. He's been doing it for a long time and he's widely published and recognized. But so because he spoke out and he actually said things that were true then and are almost irrefutable at this point, like about natural immunity and the importance of that as an aspect of the conversation when we're thinking about mandates, he could lose his ability to practice medicine. So how are we supposed to move on from that? How are we supposed to move on from what we're talking about with mandates and potentially more mandates to come at the state level, right, with vaccinations for kids to go to school, as you were saying? And we don't know where some of these politicians are going to go with it. And we're seeing other countries, even like Italy, rehiring the workers, the healthcare workers that were fired for not getting vaxxed. We see the court case in New York State. Mm-hmm. So these fights are ongoing.
And there's no movement here to rehire those that they fired and give them back pay. I mean, there's lawsuits, there's litigation, but I'm saying there's no contrition. Like Mayor Lightfoot and Pritzker didn't see what was happening in New York with their Supreme Court and say, you know what, let's end this.
So how can we preemptively forgive and forget when you have, again, these things occurring in real time or the consequences of the decisions continuing to be widely understood, and how can we forgive and forget and not get some recognition
for being
of
right.
What happened and the impact so that the next go around we don't make the same mistakes? I don't hear any of that. I don't hear recognition of tough calls and we've got this one wrong or we got it for wrong for too long. Like, for example, school. Locking down businesses, locking down schools. I don't hear any of that. The teachers
won't even recognize the data that showed that when the Catholic schools were open for a year before we were open, that there was no high transmission spread. No teachers died from getting it from a student. And the one school, the CTU, shame on them, whoever the heck did this. There's a special place in hell for them that put the burden on these two young girls and said that you brought COVID home to your mothers and killed your mothers just so that they didn't have to go back to school. And that was a lie because the woman drank herself to death.
Yeah, I mean, all of those such incidents,
sick.
The barbaric behavior. But again, as a society, we are poorer. We're sicker.
Dumber.
Our kids, and they're not dumber, but their intellectual, social, and emotional growth has been, in some cases, perhaps irreparably stunted. Stunted at least, perhaps in some cases irreparably. That's the fallout from all this. And we're just supposed to, hey, it was a tough time and some people had to make some tough calls and call it a day. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Pat in Lockport, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning, Amy. Good morning, Dan. I'm trying to control myself and maintain some level of propriety about what I'm going to say. Dan, you named all the reasons about a lack of forgiveness, and they're very legitimate. All the people that died because they were sent back to nursing homes. My own brother couldn't have a service for a year after he passed away. All the horrible damage that was done. Every one of these lousy SOBs from Fauci all the way down to the media that promoted all these falsehoods and that dumbass Walensky boosted and waxed and she gets COVID, what, for the third or fourth time? You want amnesty? Well, excuse me. I want justice. I wanted to see every one of your miserable asses hung, period. You can take your amnesty and put it where the sun doesn't shine and take your mask along with it. I have no mercy for any of these pigs. My only prayer is that God gives somebody the strength and the guts to do it.
and get the justice that this country and the world deserves with this false scandemic. Thank you for your...
Right. And Pat, sorry about your brother. And don't forget, you know, but when George Floyd died, he had three funerals. I mean, so many people couldn't even be with their loved ones when they died, couldn't bury them with family and friends around, which is what you need when your loved one passes away. And boom, he gets three funerals and everyone's there. Everything's fine.
Karen Beecher.
Good morning, my dears. My mother taught us that there were three components to forgiveness. First, you had to have regret. There has been no regret. No regret for the false science, no regret for the tactics, no regret for how they treated those of us who had different thoughts and ideas and research. Then you have to repent. There's been no repenting, none whatsoever. And then you have to repair. There's been no repair. I am still being treated like a pariah by coworkers, by the theater groups I belong to. I'm not allowed to come to audition anymore, and let alone be cast in a show. So hell to the no, I will not until they get down on their knees at the end of my driveway, bow their head, and ask for forgiveness.
Pray for Karen's
and
blessing.
They have to have regret.
Thanks
repent
for,
and repair.
Thanks for the call, Karen. Hell to the no. Got it. Appreciate it. Clay and Wheeling.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Like your first two callers, justice comes in the form of, to quote Charlie Daniels, a big tall tree and a short piece of rope. I'll also accept a 9 or a 45. This is ridiculous for what these people have done. We are Americans. We do not stand for this crap. We do not. My second point is violent.
Violence won't answer. Violence won't do it.
We are Americans. This country was founded. We had to fight for our freedom. Fight. At the end of the day, this talk show is great. We have a great time, and we discuss. And I always support discussing. Always support discussing. I will always encourage open dialogue. But we are Americans. We fight. This is the only way to truly turn evil out of this world. You fight.
Thanks for the call, Clay. Appreciate it. Candace Mount Pleasant.
Hi. Good caller where she said that she thinks they should hang. But you know what they're going to do? That's why we're not going to have any fuel in 20, 30 days. I mean, the elders, you know, the people who are running everything, they see what's happening. Now people are starting to find out everything. And so then what are they planning? Oh, guess what? No gas for you in 30, 40 days, and everything will, you know, blow up and become a calamity, and we'll turn into Venezuela. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But there should be no forgiveness. And what's most disgusting about this whole thing, I cannot believe how many people let their family members die in a nursing home or the hospital and went along with a bull jive that you can't be there.
They
that to
wouldn't
me
let
is
them
the
in, Candace.
Thing.
Candace, no, they wouldn't. No, and in Missouri,
you,
they snuck them through
I
the back.
I cannot believe I didn't see any protesters outside of hospitals, outside of nursing homes. It was, I can't believe it because, you know, we believe everything that's on the radio and TV, everything that we're told. We are the most gaslit people on the face of the
that's
earth.
That's true. And people had to file court injunctions to get because if they wanted certain treatment at a certain hospital and they wouldn't give it to them, they had to file a court motion in or court order to try to remove their loved one. But they didn't even have a control of their loved one's bodies. Remember that whole case? It's just sick.
Chuck in Delavan, Wisconsin.
Hey, you guys witnessed it. On May the 14th, 2020, we overturned our governor up here. You guys continued down there for 2 years. I met Bunky over at the Abbey, and there was nobody had no masks on over there when you guys were there. We were mask-free 2 years earlier than you were. It was just certain states continued to do that. I don't forgive anybody. I never took the jab. And, you know, there was people that didn't like me, but it didn't bother me. So thank you.
Thanks for the call, Chuck. Gabe in Lowell, Indiana.
Actually, I'm in Chattanooga because of this.
I lost
my job. My wife lost her job. My sister-in-law lost her job. Same hospital. We lost everything. We lost all our income. There will never be a forgiveness. There will never, never. We have to move out of state away from family because of this.
Was that because you wouldn't get the vaccine?
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So none of us got the vaccine, and they fired 70 nurses at that hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nurses,
yeah,
no.
I understand.
Yep.
Thanks for the call, Gabe. Appreciate it. I understand. I understand why people are not real enthusiastic about preemptive forgiveness. I understand, and I'm with them. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I know people like to focus where most of the money is spent, at the federal level, at the statewide level. But don't forget about the regional and local. Do you know who's running for state rep where you live? Are you in a competitive seat?
Do you even know who your state rep is? Because I've asked people that are pretty prominent, doctors. You know, do you know who your state rep is or state senator? No. Okay, we'll find out, and then we'll find out together so that I can educate people.
You know, I mean, you heard from Chuck and Delvin. We were talking about the whether or not to grant amnesty COVID, per the call from Emily Oster in this discussion that it spawned, but her piece in The Atlantic spawned. Chuck from Delvin talking about how the Wisconsin state legislature moved on Tony Evers, the Democrat governor in Wisconsin, and ended a lot of the lockdowns and restrictions that he had imposed much earlier than they ended in Illinois. Well, right, because they have a Republican-controlled state legislature. What do we have? We didn't even have a legislature. We didn't even have a General Assembly, it would appear. It appeared during the better part of the last 2 years. I mean, I know they met long enough to pass the Pritzker Purge Law, but otherwise, on COVID policy, it was just a deference to whatever little old Fauntleroy wanted to do. Still is.
Yeah.
It frankly spawned Darren Bailey's candidacy for governor because he was one of the few that stood up and called out these lockdowns, litigated these issues. And so, you know, even if you are in the minority, you can still use your post to make a point, to take up the fight. So your state, you know, your local state officials and your local officials, they matter in this, too. How about the mayors that decided not to go along, that said, worked with their business community, said, we're not, you know, come and get us. Molon Labe, right?
Keith Pekow, Orland Park, running
yes,
for Congress.
Exactly.
Award him with good behavior and
right,
standing up.
Right. And he's risen to prominence because he did. There's a lesson there about standing up if you're interested in being a political leader.
And how about if you live in Arlington Heights or parts of Mount Prospect or Rolling Meadows? Illinois' 53rd district. Mark Walker, he authorized a bill to decriminalize small amounts of fentanyl. That is the last thing we need right now. That's House Bill 3447. Shame on him. And that's why Jack Vrett, you should all vote for him. His father died from fentanyl. And I mean, if there, that was inspired him to run against Mark Walker. So vote for Jack Fret.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line, state issue, state, you know, level, but local, like legislative candidates. State Supreme Court races, we haven't talked a lot about those. Those are important. The balance of the state Supreme Court is 4-3 Democrat. You have two seats up in the suburbs. What if the Pritzker Purge Law is found to be unconstitutional at the circuit court level? And it makes its way up to the state Supreme Court. And you got two state Supreme Court justices who both received $500,000 from Pritzker in this race. How are they going to vote? I mean, so, you know, the interpretation of the pension clause, the Illinois Constitution. The myriad issues that would come before state Supreme Courts, 4-3 Democrat to Republican right now. Those races matter. Curran and Burke are the two Republicans. How about, I want to get to ballot initiatives in your community or your county. You just mentioned Vrett in 53 versus Walker in a legislative race. How about next door, this race between Michelle Hunter, who's the Republican, and Mary Beth Canty? Mary Beth Canty, there's video of her kneeling for the Star Spangled Banner. She held up her fist in a gesture supporting Black Lives Matter.
Oh, boy. And that's also kneeling, part of Arlington Heights.
Kneeling behind a child in the first row of a gymnastics tournament.
Oh, come on.
During the national anthem.
Well, at least it was in a 5K, a neighborhood 5K.
Yeah, well, exactly.
But still, it's just it's stupid.
No, but do you know this about Mary Beth Canty? Do you even know who Mary Beth Canty and Hunter are in Michelle Hunter are in the communities, Prospect Heights, Arlington Heights, part Buffalo Grove. How about this guy in DuPage County? This is another. These are swing seats, and these are suburban seats that Republicans have been losing, in part because they've done a bad job, in part because they haven't always had great candidates, but in part because people aren't paying attention, who otherwise know better. Who otherwise are common sense and would do the right thing if they were paying attention. Well, you got to pay attention. That's part of doing the right thing. DuPage County lawyer, candidate for state rep, Azam Nizamuddin. This is in the eastern part of DuPage County, this seat. He took 10 vaccine doses out of an allocation given to Loretta Hospital on the Chicago's west side. This was the Loretta Hospital that was slammed as being deceptive.
Right.
Right? Remember this?
Yeah, and the CEO was fired. And
He was suspended. This guy was implicated in that.
Oh, really? So he was one of the ones that took early doses away from people with a high, you know, comorbidities? And
took
the elderly?
10 vaccine doses out of an allocation. He got them from this Ali Ahmed, the president and CEO of Affinity Health, which had been overseeing the early Pfizer COVID-19 clinical trials at Loretto. So Ahmed was suspended from his post for 2 weeks. And this guy, by the way, I mean, what happened to this guy? I don't know. He's a managing partner of some family law and personal injury firm in Hinsdale. He's previously run for judge, narrowly lost in DuPage County. This is DuPage County. Do you know about this guy?
I've never heard of it.
Has anybody asked questions about that decision and what that says about his character? Frankly, if he was participating in something illicit, the conversation about some sort of at least ethical punishment, since he's a officer of the court, may be warranted. But regardless, you know who these people get down to? Michael Hastings. We talked about him. State Senator Michael Hastings in Will County. Mm-hmm. This is the guy that was trying to keep his divorce records sealed because he apparently, per the divorce records, was having an affair and and so on and so forth. And he didn't want to know. He tried to get involved with Frankfurt police. He essentially used his post to try to influence local police and the press. I mean, this is a rising star in the Democrat Party, Michael Hastings. Really? Is anybody talking about that in Will County? I mean, at least as it pertains to this race, you know, you're allowed to have more than one thought. You're allowed to pay attention to more than one thing simultaneously. You could pay attention to the governor's race, to congressional races, and also have a bit of knowledge about what's going on locally in important legislative races. How about this? My friend Tony Sambo, he's a really good golfer, by the way.
Good.
Play with him in
better
Olympic
than
Fields.
You.
Yeah. He is better than me. He's a scratch. Actually, I think he's like a plus two.
Wow.
But anyway, Tony runs a manufacturing concern in Will County. He lives in Frankfort.
Okay.
And he wrote in the Patch, vote no on November 8 on Frankfort and Will County property tax hike. Highest property taxes in the nation. And are you paying attention to property tax hike referenda questions on your local ballots? Apparently this one in Frankfort is asking residents for a property tax increase in order to expand park district spending by 65%.
Oh, come on.
Also to approve an entirely new property tax to create a mental health board in Will County. So at the county level and the local level. And one of the reasons we have the highest tax property taxes in the nation, sometimes they say New Jersey's are higher, but actually if you look at it, ours are. One of the reasons, because we have more local units of government than any state in the nation, despite being only the fifth most populous. More units of government, more taxing bodies, higher taxes. That's how it goes. So, you know, property tax relief, rethinking our entire property tax system. I know local governments will say, well, hey, you know, that's the schools and this and that. Right. Everybody's got a story and everybody's got a levy. And it all adds up, doesn't it? You know what it adds up to? Your home being collateral for somebody else's pension. And that's it.
Look at your mortgage statements, people. See how much you're paying in property taxes and how much you're paying in principal.
So, I mean, I just, like, you know, you got a few days here yet to investigate and find out if you haven't been paying attention. Find out who these people are. Start asking some questions about legislative candidates, about state Supreme Court candidates, about local ballot initiatives, you know? Roger, Southside.
Morning, both of you. Quick comment to Amy. Amy, if you want all the things to end that you tell us about every morning, get out of Lakeview. I don't care how much you love it or your children love it. Okay, Lakeview has never been for the people who have their head on straight since the early 80s, okay? It's beautiful, real nice, you know, Wrigley
nice.
Field and all, a lot of bars. But, you know, listen, those people aren't right. They're not right for a living. Dan, to you, yeah, I'm glad you're going through this. Out south, we've got some real people who went unnoticed, like Bill Cunningham.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Hey, Bill, how you doing, Bill? anyway, yeah, so there's a lady from the Mount Greenwood area, Christine McGovern.
McGovern, yeah.
I love her. How
about all those people? How about all those Southsiders, all those Southside Democrats from Matt O'Shea, the alderman, Fran Hurley, Billy Cunningham, all these people? when Danny Golden gets shot, all of a sudden they're Law and Order. All of a sudden, they remember their law and order again, and that their neighborhoods are dominant, and their districts are dominated by first responders. All of a sudden, they are. Well, they stand quietly by, or worse, when their party's power structure openly antagonistic, openly hostile to first responders, defund first responders, particularly police, vilify police, turn the streets over to thugs. All of a sudden, Danny Golden gets shot, and they remember they're pro police, pro law and order. What a scam! What a
right.
scam!
Here, what is it going to take? Is it going to take is going to take, I don't know, a whole gang of thugs coming into a bar on Western Avenue and lighting up a bunch of Rich Beverly kids? Is that going to be the line in the sand then?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what the line in the sand is. It's
but
a good question.
Vote for Christy McGovern. Thanks don't
for the
vote
call,
for
Roger.
Bill Cunningham.
Appreciate it. Yeah, and it was just pointed out yesterday, what the hell is FOP? What the hell is John Canzaro doing giving Cunningham $50,000 for what?
I don't know why. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Any of these Democrats, they are the party of J.B. Pritzker, Chris Welch, Don Harmon, the radical left. Period. Full stop. I don't care who they say they are in Mount Greenwood. Joe in his car.
Yeah, Dan and Amy, thanks for what you guys are doing. I want to ask the Lord to put a hedge of protection around all your listeners out there. And, Dan, without you doing what you've been doing for this political season, there wouldn't be nothing out there. It's a travesty that there's no opposition to this communism that's coming down the pipe at us. And like the last caller said, out in the Beverly, I'm a Southsider. Not over that way. I'm West Side. But I just can't believe what they're allowing to happen in their own neighborhood and being vilified as being police and fire. It's unbelievable. But I just wanted to call and thank you for what you've done, because you're the only one out there doing a damn thing. God bless you.
Thanks for the call. I'm not the only one. There's a lot of people, but I appreciate it. But we need more. Jonathan Carroll. I mean, I don't want to forget him. Jonathan Carroll,
God.
State rep from Northbrook. Oh, the, you know, the, you know.
Gross. He looks gross, too. He looks off.
But we believe women, North Shore, right?
Yeah.
And he pressures a staffer to get an abortion and then fires her because she wouldn't. We had her on the show last week.
Yeah.
That's the allegation. Are people paying attention to that up in Northfield Township?
And then the, you know, queasy comments he would make to her that she alleged on this program. I don't know.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And his chief of staff, too. But very detailed story about things that were said by both his chief of staff, basically legislative aide, chief of staff, his legislative aide and him, Jonathan Carroll. Any reckoning there? Conversations happening on the Tony North Shore about Jonathan Carroll? Matt in Oak Lawn.
Hey, good morning, guys. Following up, something you mentioned yesterday after you had Keith Pico on the line, and then just what you're talking about with the 19th Ward. So I've been dropping off signs for Pico, and I live in Oak Lawn, but I could hit a golf ball into the 19th Ward. You wouldn't believe how many signs. So, like, I would go from Beverly, Mount Greenwood, and the southeastern corner of Oak Lawn. I'm not kidding when I tell you, it's littered with peacock signs.
Yeah.
And you don't see any casting signs.
Yeah. Well, that we were talking to Keith Peacock about this yesterday. I think so the cartographers of the left made a bit of an overreach in that district and probably didn't expect the matchup with Keith Peacock. But the city portion of that district is not going to be helpful to Sean Casson, which is why I think Peacock's going to beat him.
Yeah, I think so, too. Anyways, have a great day.
And it's another reason why Biden and Harris are coming in Friday, one on Friday, one on Sunday, to help, you know, get out the vote for Democrats. And on the list it says help Sean Casson.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, no, I think they're getting nervous, Dan.
They're definitely nervous about Casson, Underwood, and Foster.
Yep, and they're that's who they're helping or trying to. And Pritzker they're helping, too.
Cindy, Arlington Heights. Hi, Cindy.
Oh, hey, hi, Dan. What's going on with Burke running for Supreme Court? And I'm wondering if Ed Burke and Ann Burke are his parents.
No. Michael Burke, no relation. There's a lot of Irish. There's a lot of mix out there.
There are?
Burke. Yeah. Yeah, no relation.
Daniel O'Proft?
No, yeah. Burke, thanks for the call, Cindy. This is
people are
people,
wondering, yes.
That's why people need to. No, Mike Burke, no relation to Ed and Ann. He's a Republican. He's a you know, originalist in terms of judicial philosophy. I mean, he's good. We need him there. Tina Joliet.
Hi, good morning. So I just wanted to talk about this mental health board levy, because I don't think people quite understand. The entire reason it's even on the ballot is because two of the most radical left members of the Will County Board pushed and got it on. Once it's on the ballot, now it goes to the taxpayer, and they're trying to pass it off as a tiny little tax that will just, you know, help the poor downtrodden of Will County. We don't need it. What they're not being told is that the board, this new mental health board, if it's passed, the head of the Will County board gets to choose those seven people. None of them have to have any background in mental health care. And once assigned, they're allowed to hire staff, assess salaries, benefits, purchase properties, lease space. This nobody is talking about this. I've been trying to do live streams and to let people know, you know, vote no on Amendment 1 and vote no on this mental health levy. This mental health levy is on all ballots throughout the state of Illinois. So this is a very coordinated effort to get this thing pushed through. It already exists in a handful of counties, but they've taken it to every other county in Illinois now. This is absolutely coordinated by the left, and I honestly think it's to push the trans agenda. I think they're going to use that money to help, you know, to act as an outreach to pushing their propaganda for the trans community.
Thanks for the call, Tina. Will County, Democrats took over the county board. DuPage County, Democrats took over the county board. Those offices matter.
Yeah, they do.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The rapper Ice Cube. You remember Ice Cube? He used to be like a gangster rapper with NWA.
Yes.
And then he turned into a middle-aged guy who does dopey sitcoms. It's weird. And sort of silly movies. But actually, he was good, and it was a great movie. Straight Outta Compton. Did you see that about NWA?
Yep, I did watch that movie.
It was actually quite good. Well, Ice Cube is a bit of an independent thinker in his own right, which is always interesting and helpful and something to be promoted. You remember last year in the run-up to the 2020 election, I guess that's 2 years ago now, he rolled out his contract with Black America. And he essentially called on both parties to, and people of both parties, to take up the component parts of the Black contract with America that he drafted and make this part of the policy discussion. Some of it is good. Some of it is, I don't know if I could go along with. But regardless, it's a good discussion piece. Well, he's talking about it again and how it's gone, relationship with the Biden administration. You know, because 90% of, 85, 90% of Black Americans are affiliated with the Democrat Party, at least in terms of how they vote. So, well, how's it going?
The Biden administration agreed with 85% of what you had in there. What didn't they agree with?
I guess 85% because they didn't, I still haven't spoken to them about it. So, you know, they haven't done anything to act on it. You know, I've had one conversation with an assistant to the president, but no talk with the president, and you know, no other movement. So we're still working, though. We're still, like I said, working behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. And on the heat that he took for engaging with the previous president, the previous administration, Trump.
How did you view the heat that you took for engaging with the Trump administration?
I just think people didn't understand, you know, exactly where I was coming from. And people are really used to seeing, you know, black people just go on one side to the Democratic Party. And, you know, we've been doing that for a long time as a people. And we haven't really gained as much as I believe we should. And I believe it's important to engage with both sides.
Imagine that. Imagine that. Yeah, hun, how's it going for black families in Chicago and Cook County in the state of Illinois? The black unemployment rate in the city of Chicago is 2.5 times the white unemployment rate. 22% of black third graders read at grade level CPS. 22%. Half of that do math at grade level. Do I need to say anything about the violence and who the supermajority of victims are? 3 kids shot on the west side on Halloween of the 14 teenagers, or not preteens.
And listen, they had a vigil last night, and listen to this man. It was 10 people in the same family were shot, and this is what they want on the west side.
We want the same results, consideration, and resources that they got in Highland Park.
Yeah, well, yeah. I can appreciate that perspective.
Yep, not a big ask.
So it's a, and that takes two. The one, you have to make the overture, and for the person that is receiving the overture, they have to be open-minded. Ice Cube is open-minded. We've made the overture this cycle in a very pronounced way. There's not a, I don't know if there is a black media, black-owned media outlet in Chicago and Cook County that I have not bought paid advertising, because I agree these outlets, and we talked about this with Lightfoot, using other people's money to try to buy support. These are important outlets. They have important audiences. We want to reach. So the overture is being made. It's being made at the gubernatorial level by Charles Thomas, former ABC 7 political reporter. Being made by Beverly Miles, who also stood up against Pritzker in the primary campaign and ran against him. It's being made by people who have not forgotten the things that Pritzker said about black officials when he ran, and well, was unearthed when he ran in 2018. The calls that he's on with Blagojevich, that the FBI had wired up, talking about who should be in which slot, starting with replacing Barack Obama in the Senate, and using, you want to talk about dog whistles, using dog whistles like sort of qualified and least offensive in terms of referencing Jesse White and the kind of black candidate that would sell. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing, you know, I mean, this is, and it's interesting because you see real movement among Latino voters, huge minority group, also in Cook County, Chicago, the nation. Important politically, could be, is potent politically, could be a lot more potent, and they're getting a lot more potent. Why? Because they're engaging with both sides so that nobody takes them for granted and nobody ignores them. Maybe more black voters will start to do the same beginning on Tuesday. For more on this in the context of the Cook County Board race, please be joined by the Republican nominee for Cook County Board President running against Tony Preckwinkle, Bob Fioretti. Bob, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good to be here this morning. Thanks.
What about your overtures? You know, obviously Preckwinkle is a black female, but you have to, in Cook County, you have to make overtures to get sizable portions of the black and Latino vote in order to be successful. What are you doing there?
Well, I've been reaching out to pastors in both the Latino community, where I believe I have about 70 to 80 pastors right now endorsing me, but they're afraid to come out. I met with 50 of them yesterday. They said that to me. I have about 20 black pastors who would like to, and they're trying to figure out and determine a way to come out and endorse me, but they are worried. They're worried about any repercussions from the Democratic Party and the head of it, Tony Preckwinkle.
But you're a former Democrat.
Yeah, and
do you have that conversation?
You know, the Democratic Party, as I've said many, many a time, 6 years ago, left me and left most of the middle class here in the city and the county of Cook.
With the
and their policies are so extreme. I mean, these guaranteed income programs that both Lightfoot and Preckwinkle are doing here in the county, mm-hmm. we're giving 3,250 people 500 a month for 2 years, and no strings attached, no financial literacy, no job training, no work to be done for the 500. And you had, what, 220,000 people apply for it? Are we kidding ourselves?
Well, Preckwinkle said she wanted to scale the program. Right. This is a pilot program to be scaled, of course. She wanted to scale the program to everyone who is eligible under the income requirements. That would be like 1.7 million Cook County residents. I mean, that would be a multi-billion-dollar guaranteed basic income program is what she's really angling for, it seems.
And they also opened up the program to the asylum seekers that have arrived in Chicago, some 3,000.
Right, and she wants to do this even after this federal money runs out. So who's going to pay for it? The taxpayers of Cook County. More tax increases. That's where it's headed. It's absolutely boneheaded type, typical Democratic policies. Here's the money. Give us the vote.
Well, here the other thing with Preckwinkle, too, I mean, she's, you know, Lightfoot and Pritzker have taken, and Fox have taken the fire, but she's part of that cabal. I mean, she's obviously Kim Fox's mentor.
I think people misunderstand. She is the reason. It's her progressive policies. 2 months after Kim Fox was elected 6 years ago, she pulled in Fox, Tim Evans, the chief judge, and Tom Dart. She set the standards on each one of those offices. It's in a lot of the minutes of the meetings of the board and the budget hearings. And she is the puppet master on who controls what's happening, the crime surge here in the county and in the city. She's the one responsible. And her protege, the mentor who she mentors, Kim Fox, she put her in there, into that office. She designed the programs, and her once adversary, Tim Evans, is the person who just has to do what she says in terms of how the bond was setting the bond, setting the sentencing, and here we are with the sheriff's budget increasing year after year, but we're tearing down jail cells and jail blocks to keep prisoners.
That's her goal, right, to release everybody from prison?
Well, when she ran for Cook County Board President, she said her top priority was to reduce the population in Cook County Jail. That wasn't like we want to reduce it because there are people there that are innocent or this and that. We want to reform. No, I just want to reduce it by any means necessary. And that's what's happened with the electronic monitoring program and obviously now with something she supports like her protege Kim Fox does, the Pritzker Purge Law.
And so she was really the architect of the Safety Act way before it even became a law here in this state. So you know, we have to start standing up. We need people to get out and vote and deal with this whole corrupt system of what we are seeing, because the taxpayers of this county are fleeing. Our government spending is out of control. Infrastructure, whether you're in the city or in the county, is crumbling, and our taxes are higher than ever. And what do we get for it? We don't get anything.
Speaking of taxes and taxpayers, I know this isn't her direct responsibility, but she has been noticeably silent on the issue. People getting the second installment on their property taxes. We had David Hochberg on the show, of course, mortgage broker David Hochberg, talking about, you know, just the negative financial impact in addition to the political chicanery aspect of not getting your property tax bills until after the election, if even before the end of the year.
Well, here's the actual issue that she knew, and she convened over a year ago. All the parties, and granted, she likes to blame Kagi, who's now her other puppet in this whole tax structure and getting the tax bills out. But she sat there, and the Board of Review people, who all three of them were backing a different candidate for assessor, and she's backing Kagan. This whole thing boiled down to a strictly a political fight. I was on a program last night with two very progressive, including Kagan, and there he was, and it was like he wasn't even taking responsibility for getting the tax bills out in time. Well, it's a bunch of other issues, as he said. Wait a minute. You know, she knew then. She had the responsibility, and she couldn't get it. And why? Because they don't want to get it out on time.
Why? Because it'll affect voting? I mean, we need it for our tax returns at the end of the year.
Absolutely. And don't forget, she was a staunch supporter of Joe Berrios during the before she became a staunch supporter of Fritz Kagan. So it's a lot of these small municipalities are suffering because they can't make the payroll because they need the taxes to come in. People are, the new home, if you just sold your home, a lot of people are escrowing the money. It's going to be held in escrow until the final taxes come out. This is really illegal. Complicated in terms of what's happening, but it lays on the footsteps of Tony Preckwinkle.
And things are going to be different under Bob Fioretti. How? Give me one big idea.
Well, I think we'll be a truly open and transparent government, but we are going to enact change that's going to fix the problems plaguing our county. We're going to rein in spending. We're going to look at every department. We're going to make cuts the cuts are necessary, and we're going to stop this foolishness. We're headed towards a big disaster after this federal money runs out in a year and a half from now. And we're going to have to make really tough decisions and not tax the taxpayers.
He is Bob Fioretti, Republican candidate for Cook County Board President. FioretiForCook.com is the website. Bob, thanks for joining us. Good luck.
Good to be here this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch. And it feels so good. You switch to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan, I forgot to ask Bob Fioretti if he's got a fun jingle. Remember when he ran for mayor in 2015?
Hot dogs, pizza, sports, and spaghetti. If you love Chicago, gotta love Fioretti. Fights for your rights on the council floor. Legislation, he does so much more. Look at the ward he revitalized. Look at the city run privatized. Hot dogs, pizza, sports, and spaghetti. If you love Chicago, vote for Bob Fioretti.
Paid for by friends of Bob Fioretti.
He shouldn't have. Shouldn't have paid for it. No, it's actually kind of funny.
And they show a kid like shoving spaghetti down.
It's kind of kitschy, but it's fun. Yeah, he should have brought that back, updated it for the Cook County board race.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Yesterday we had Jean Cable on the show. She is the niece of a Chicago police sergeant who was murdered, assassinated, along with his partner 50 years ago, 52 years ago now, in Cabrini Green. And one of the killers of the two officers was paroled last year. It's posted at morninganswerchicago.com. You should go listen to the whole interview. Here's sort of the summary of the story, as I summarized it in a radio spot I'm doing, for the gubernatorial race. As you know, I run this PAC that's involved in the governor's race, supporting Bailey, opposing Pritzker. Here's the ad featuring Jean Cable and her story.
My uncle was a sergeant in the Chicago Police Department, and he loved being a Chicago police officer. He was with a patrol officer, Anthony Rosato, and on the evening of July 17, 1970, they were assassinated.
Jean Cable is still incensed more than a year after the Illinois Prisoner Review Board released convicted cop killer Johnny Veal for the 1970 Cabrini Green sniper killing of her uncle, Police Sergeant James Severin.
I never thought I'd see the day where convicted cop killers would be released released on the streets, and people would be okay with it.
For decades, Jean and her family had the support of governors and prosecutors, Democrats and Republicans, to keep her uncle's killer behind bars. Until J.B. Pritzker.
We did not get any letters whatsoever from Governor Pritzker opposing parole. When you kill a police officer, it's an unforgivable crime. My message to the governor would be shame on you.
Punish J.B. Pritzker for releasing a cop killer. Paid for by People Who Play by the Rules Pack.
Never thought I'd see the day when cop killers would be let free. Well, that day came when Pritzker, Fox, and Lightfoot came into power. We got a response to, and by the way, there's a 30-second TV ad that's based on the story as well. That's up yesterday as well, so look for that and share it. We got a response to our interview from George Devereaux. He writes, Dear Casey, no, he writes us, I was commander of the 18th District, 2015 to 2016, where we continued the tradition of hosting annual luncheons for the Severin and Rosado families in the memory of Sergeant James Severin and Patrolman Tony Rosado. With the great assistance of the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation, then Captain Paul Bauer, who was able to acquire, who was also killed in the line of duty, was able to acquire the painted memorial horses dedicated to Sergeant Severin and Patrolman Rosado. We dedicated the two memorial horses during one of the luncheons, and they now are prominently placed in the 18th District Community Room. When I learned of the release of the convicted murderer of Severin and Rosado by the Illinois Prisoner Review Board, I was incensed. I began to research the 12-member panel of the board. Some of the members had a legal and law enforcement background, but more of the board members had a community activist and restorative justice background.
Oh, there you go.
I immediately drafted a letter and sent the members the letter personally addressed to each board member. Several weeks later, one of the board members contacted me, was extremely apologetic. The member related that the Illinois Prisoner Review Board changed when Governor Pritzker took office. The member was very respectful, contrite, and appeared frustrated. I was aware that Cook County State's Attorney Fox made a public proclamation that her office would no longer assist the families of slain police officers in their parole board hearings. I did not know that Governor Pritzker and Mayor Lightfoot declined to offer any assistance on behalf of the Severin or Rosado families. It seems the phrase, we will never forget, rings hollow in the minds and hearts of these three political leaders of our city, county, and state. Very sad. George Devereaux. Former 18th District Commander. Very sad indeed is the state of affairs in Illinois. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by the Republican nominee for governor. He is State Senator Darren Bailey. Darren, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, friends. It's always great to be on here, and just thank you so much for keeping things relevant and keeping everyone informed. So,
well,
we're living in some interesting days.
Yeah, well, let's start with law enforcement. On the front side, we don't want to keep people accused of violent crimes detained pending trial, and then on the back side, we're releasing cop killers.
No, that's exactly right. As a matter of fact, on Governor Pritzker's prisoner review board, at one point in time, he had a convicted murderer that held a position on that board, and we were successfully in the Senate able to get to that person removed. And even in my Senate district in Effingham County, Trooper Davis was held down and murdered 45 years ago. And just last year, the accomplice, the man that held him down, was released. And the actual murderer, the man that pulled the trigger, is going to be released. That's the twisted mess that J.B. Pritzker is allowing and is promoting.
But why is he doing it? I mean, letting cop killers go, what benefits does it have to him? How does it benefit
Amy,
him, I should say?
Why is this man doing anything that he's doing? This man he has a twisted mind. I mean, if we look at I've been dealing with this for years. In the House and in the Senate, and people ask me all the time, what is the agenda? I mean, if he's not letting cop killers go, he's teaching our children his woke ideology. I don't know. I cannot figure this out except just a twisted mind. It's destroying our state, and people are becoming aware of that, and I think that's going to be the catalyst to removing him here in just a few days.
Well, I know there's litigation pending against the Safety Act to declare it unconstitutional. That's pending in a Kankakee court. But what steps are you going to take if you're elected on Tuesday to repeal the Safety Act if you can't get a court to enjoin it, but you know, before you would take office in January, if it requires legislative action, what steps are you prepared to take?
Well, I have full confidence that we will be able to repeal this. You're starting to see, Governor Pritzker now with his empty rhetoric suggests that, well, maybe we need to take a look at some things. You've got the Democrat senators and representatives proposing, these so-called trailer bills. I want to remind people, if J.D. Pritzker was serious at all about making any changes, and, my phone should be ringing right now calling me to Springfield and within 6 hours and sitting down and creating these changes. But
right.
Back in January of 2021, when this passed, it did pass, I believe, in the House by a very narrow margin. Now that people know what it does, and unfortunately, the very people that wrote this simply don't know what it does. Representative Speaker Welch yesterday posted a text stating that this person that recently made a threat against me, would just simply be released or could be held after the Safety Act passes and goes into effect, which is completely untrue. J.D. Pritzker and the people that wrote this, the 700 pages, they have no idea what it says. I'm going to put my interest behind the 100 of the 102 states' attorneys that know exactly what it says. I'm going to put my trust behind the entire law enforcement that has endorsed me because they know exactly what it says and what they can and can't do. And it's just a shame. I think this has really revealed the hypocrisy and the incompetence of JB and his administration that they simply don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're signing. They don't understand how devastating some of these policies are that they put into action over the last 4 years.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about this scumbag who made the threats against you, saying, quote, "I'm going to skin Darren Bailey alive, making sure he's still alive, and I'm going to feed his blank family to him as he is alive and screaming in blank in pain." Now, I know the Illinois Secretary of State Police did not immediately deem him to be a credible threat. And then what happened? It was turned over to Illinois State Police?
Well, the Illinois State Police really intervened on their in and of themselves. They looked into it up until the point that I talked with Secretary of State Police. I hadn't even listened to this, to the message myself. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a farmer. I work, and I'm used to, I've had threats before. But when I finally got to the point that I could slow down and just stop and listen to this message, it was concerning, and I thought, wow. And then shortly after that, I was contacted by state police, and the officer that I was talking to, he even said, he said, Darren, he said, I've never, 8 years of doing this, and I've never heard anything remotely close and as disturbing as this. So, in this day and age, and with the divisive rhetoric that Joe Biden and J.B. Pritzker are pushing out there, we thought, well, we need to, obviously, this has got to be dealt with.
Are they going to let you know if he bonds out? Because they said when he does, they're going to put him on electronic monitoring. But will somebody contact you?
The state police have been doing an excellent job of keeping us posted. So I assume so, yes.
It's not the first time. People have short memories. Jeannie Ives, former state rep and gubernatorial candidate Jeannie Ives, she had a guy send threatening messages to her. He was prosecuted by Bob Berlin in the DuPage County State's Attorney's Office. He was convicted. This is a few years back now. But, I mean, this is, there's a certain unhinged element on the left that is papered over by the corporate legacy media because, of course, they're of the left as well. But it is very real, and you see it all the time. And this against the backdrop of Biden's speech yesterday, talking about politically inspired violence and so on and so forth. But it's very one-sided, their discussion. Speaking of which, Biden and Harris are coming to town this weekend. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's very obvious what we make of that. The exact same reason why Obama got involved. J.B. Pritzker knows he's losing. We're not going to see that out in the mainstream press, as you well know. But, guys, I'm telling you, everywhere we go, last night, happened right just down in, on LaSalle Street, doing an interview outside of an office where I just had a meeting. And, you know, people just are coming up to us. They're just standing there in a suit, no Bailey stuff, signs or anything. And people are coming up, and they're frustrated. They're ready for change. I made a stop at a gas station in Kankakee on the way home, and people are coming up to us just saying, you've got to get rid of this guy. So people know and they understand, and even though the press isn't reporting that, J.B. Pritzker knows it. So it's all hands on deck, but it's simply too little too late, because there's too much at stake for our state, and you've done a good job, we've done a good job of getting that message out to the people, and that really, in the days ahead, it's an informed constituency. We've people of Illinois, including myself, prior to getting involved in government, we just trusted and assumed that the people that we send to office are going to do the right thing, and we're so busy being overtaxed and overburdened, raising our families, we don't pay attention to this thing called state government, because, you know, it really frustrates and disgusts us because our elected leaders are failing us. But in the days ahead, as we become more informed and getting involved, and that's what I'm seeing happen with people running for office, with people signing up, thousands of people signing up to be poll watchers, I think we've got an amazing opportunity to turn this state around, because that is how my administration is going to be emulated, just exactly how it was the last 4 years. I'm going to talk to the people, I'm going to tell them they have options, and I'm going to point out the bad actors, and hopefully their elected, their constituency will hold them accountable. That's the only way we turn this around.
So if and when you become governor, what would be your first line of business?
Well, we will be obviously tackling the Safety Act. It must be repealed in its entirety, period. You know, our energy bill that was just created, it must be repealed, because it's devastating. It's a devastating blockade for any business to want to come here to Illinois. But aside that, I will be cleaning house in every agency there is. Every agency director will be given their pink slip, ushered to the door, and we will be placing competent, common sense, business-minded men and women to take these places, Illinois State Board of Education, DCFS. I mean, just every agency director will be replaced, and they will be tasked with developing, the priority, their own budget, that we can literally present to the people and show the people where their money's being spent. We got to get rid of our school, or we got to get our schools low and to reprioritize. So basically getting safety, getting our taxes down, and getting our schools back. Those are the three pillars of which we'll be working on.
Talk a little bit about that. It hasn't gotten enough play, but there was a Crane story just a few weeks back that under Pritzker's energy policies, you know, which are basically modeled after Gavin Newsom's energy policies in California, under his policies, Illinois is going to go from being effectively energy independent, if you will, to a net importer of energy by the end of the decade. So you explain what's happening and what this means for the, you know, to the cost of doing business here.
So Illinois is actually already an importer of energy. Prior to this bill, we imported 15% of our energy, although, you know, we have two energy markets, the PJM market up north and the MISO market down south. And combined with that, with the shutdown of our coal plants, the MISO market is already importing energy. So we are a net importer, regardless of what J.B. Pritzker says. And this summer, all across the state, in the Ameren market, in the MISO market, people received notices. Everyone, I got one at my household here through my local co-op that said, hey, expect higher energy rates. Almost the southern two-thirds of Illinois, they have already doubled. And they actually said, the letter said, I think it was sent out in May or June, there could be a possibility of brownouts and blackouts. And the only reason that didn't happen is because we didn't have consistently hot days. So we definitely stand at risk of that. Why would a business come here to Illinois when, number one, they don't feel safe, number two, our schools are failing so their families can't raise their kids properly, and number three, they can't depend on the energy to keep their lights on? That's the harsh reality of what we're living with this energy bill. It goes too far. It goes too fast. We need to slow it down, throttle it back, and work with the technology becomes available. That technology simply doesn't exist right now.
He is State Senator Darren Bailey, the Republican nominee for governor, on the ballot on Tuesday, of course. Darren, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck on Tuesday.
Hey, thank you, guys. God bless you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka, today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Lauren Underwood, the nurse impersonator who lives with her mom, or did, prior to her election, surprise election to Congress in the Western Burbs. She's in trouble. She's in trouble. She's one of the three races in the suburbs that Republicans have a good chance to pick up. These are all dead heat, so turnout is going to be determinative. Talking about Pekow against Kasten, talking about Lauf versus Foster, and we're talking about Scott Grider versus Lauren Underwood. Scott Grider, who is the Kendall County Board Chairman and an attorney, joins us now. Scott, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan, Amy. I'm excited to be here this morning.
Yeah, so give us your handle on the state of play and how it's become a race that, that Republicans should win. I suppose we should have never lost it, but it's tough to get seats back when you lose them and you're on the cusp of doing just that.
It's difficult, you know, when you to go up against an incumbent. You can see it. The three races that you just mentioned were being outspent handily by the Democrats. They have that power of incumbency. And one of the things that I like to say is that Lauren Underwood has never had a problem spending other people's money. And that just is shown by the fact that she's with her fundraising, but also with what she's done as a legislator. There's been $9 trillion in new spending since February of 2021. And I don't think Lauren Underwood has seen a spending bill that she hasn't liked. And so people across this district see that. They understand that. And, you know, that's why we're trending in the right direction and why I'm really confident we're going to win this on Tuesday.
Would she, did you offer her to debate or did she offer you to debate? What happened with that?
We had a forum. We've talked about it at different times and they just never were able to materialize, during this, last couple of months.
And so the interesting thing sort of like with Pekow versus Kasten is, you both have records. She has one in Congress. You have one at the county level. So compare and contrast those records. You started talking about hers, at least on the fiscal side. Yeah. But compare and contrast those records.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, I do have a record. I've been on the county board for almost a decade. She's been in Congress for 4 years. First thing that we did when I got onto the county board, I took over a committee of the whole meeting, not fully understanding the process, I guess. I made some people, ruffled a few feathers by introducing a 10-point transparency plan within a couple of months of being on the board. And I thought that was important, not necessarily because there were so many things that had been wrong or, that we were concerned about in Kendall County, but because it's important to the taxpayers to know where their money is being spent and to know, what vendors are being hired and different things like that. So we were able to do that immediately upon taking over Congress. Once I became chair in 2016, we went out and we did what I call kind of a sanity check on our vendors. We had some vendors that we'd used for 20 and 25 years and more than happy to bring them back. But, we wanted to go out and just comparison shop. And we did that and we came back and it resulted in hundreds of thousands of dollars in savings. And, at a county level, that's real dollars that we're saving. And that all goes to property taxes. So, any dollars that we're able to save, helps our residents. And speaking of property taxes, I became chair in 2016. We did not take the CPI on existing homes, in the last 5 years. And we're on a track to do that. We're hoping to finish our budget season right now to do it here. So I not only, do I talk about, reining in spending, but we've done that. And I've done that. And she hasn't. And that's really our first priority is to stop this hemorrhaging that the people of the 14th Congressional District are feeling, from higher gas taxes and grocery bills to higher school supplies. It's all directly related to government action. It's all, directly related to more and more spending by Washington, D.C. And, you can even look at the fact that my opponent has a 0% rating by the National Association of Manufacturers. It's a I think it's a 14% rating with National Federation of Independent Business, which is her small businesses. And it goes to show where her priorities are. It's more federal spending and less innovation and supporting our entrepreneurs and small businesses. And that just has to change. So there's 300,000 regulations on our manufacturers. You talk about onerous regulation. That's we need to take the blow the covers off of that and get back to encouraging entrepreneurship and private enterprise here in this country to get things back on track.
So Scott Grider, you're making people a little nervous. President Biden's going to be coming to Chicago with JB, and they're going to be focusing on boosting suburban Chicago congressional races, such as Sean Cass, and it says Bill Foster and Lauren Underwood. So what's your reaction to that? It shows, someone's getting a little scared.
Well, my wife woke this morning when I woke up. She said, "Oh, how's my extremist doing this morning?"
And yeah, right. You know, exactly.
That's my new nickname among the friends and apparently enemies as well. Is the word extremist? And it went from I got a text message from a friend yesterday who said, it went from flowers and rainbows in her ads to Scott Grider is black and white on the. Your photo and an extremist and just a terrible, person. So you must be doing something right. the fact that the president is coming here, she actually had brought out Kamala Harris previously. She'd brought out a member of the cabinet previously. She's had Mitch Landrieu, she brought as a proxy. I forget his exact position with the federal government, but when he was the mayor of New Orleans, crime went up 50%. Okay. Speaking of crime, I asked her when we did have a forum if she would join me in asking the state to go back and take a look at the Safety Act and go back and do it correctly. And she not only did not want to do that, but said I was confused about what office I was running for. And, what I'm not confused about is what's concerning people of the 14th Congressional District. And that is definitely at the top of the list. And, we certainly have a pulpit that we can raise the, the level of interest on. And I think you guys are doing a good job of that too. And you had Darren Bailey on here before, who's done a good job about that as well. But that's something that people in the 14th district are very concerned about.
Well, yeah, we had your county state's attorney on the show a couple weeks back for an extended chat, and he really provided a lot of detail, which was helpful as somebody who's been a prosecutor for 2.5 decades. And, so that this, people don't look at these issues necessarily as who, the layers of government, who bears primary responsibility. They want everybody to be on the same page when it comes to providing for their safety. And we have people, including, as you were just saying, Underwood, who were on one page with Pritzker and Lightfoot and Fox, and people who are on a different page.
Well, that's so correct. And you can take it even further. I asked her about this as well. She's taken money from Ilhan Omar in Minnesota, who has called for the complete defunding of the Minneapolis Police Department. And, she didn't want to condemn that either. And that just kind of tells you where her priorities are and where ours are. We'll support the law enforcement community and have supported the law enforcement community. Everything that we also have a sheriff here in Kendall County that we support his budget. And we have, anytime he's come back to us and asked us and said, hey, we really need this. Training in particular is something that he's very big on. And he's not afraid to hold bad cops accountable. I think that nobody has a concern with that. But we all want to be safe in our communities. And we want the men and women of law enforcement to wake up and feel like, we're behind them and have their back every morning and not, this scenario that we're in right now where there's some concern about that in certain segments.
Beyond the fiscal matters, if you're elected to Congress, what are you excited to get to Washington to do? What is it you want to? And I don't mean sightseeing. I mean, to do as a congressman.
Well, we can do the sightseeing, on recess.
Yes, right.
So much work that there's so much work that needs to be done. One of the things that we need to talk about is energy independence. We have to have an all hands on deck, all the above approach to that. And we're not at a point where we're ready to get rid of fossil fuels. And, Biden has promised to end fossil fuels and, higher gas prices are part of the, I forget how he worded it, but basically an inevitable transition. So, if you elect Lauren Underwood, you elect Democrats back to Congress, your gas prices aren't coming down. And, a reason for that is he's halted, new energy projects. He's shut down pipeline construction. And, look at California. I think we maybe talked about this last time I was on, but they announced that they were going to get rid of or, you know, outlaw gas-powered vehicles by 2030, the next day they're talking about brownouts. You know, our grid just isn't ready for that at this point in time. And we also have one of the largest biofuel facilities in the country in this district as well. So, you know, that's something that's really important to us is energy independence. Border security, so critical. It's you know, it's national security, but it's also something that here, you know, it's the fentanyl crisis. Fentanyl is coming over the border, and it's the leading killer among 18 to 45-year-olds right now. And, you know, at what point are we going to do something to stop that and curb that? And, you know, Lauren Underwood said that she's been down there to the border multiple times, and, you know, she condemned the Texas governor, you know, sending busloads, you know, of immigrants up here. And, you know, what that means is that maybe she was there, but she wasn't listening. She's not listening to what the governor was saying. She's not listening to what people are saying, and certainly not listening to what families are saying that, you know, are dealing with this fentanyl crisis.
He is Scott Grider. He's the Republican nominee for Congress in Illinois' 14th, running against incumbent Lauren Underwood. Scott, G-R-Y-D-E-R, scottgrider.com for more information about his candidacy and campaign in these closing days. Scott, thanks for joining us. Good luck on Tuesday.
Hey, thanks for having me on. We're excited, and we're going to finish strong. Thanks, thanks, Amy, as well.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The closing salvo from Democrat Socialist Nikki Budzinski down in central Illinois, this newly created district per the remap, district that goes from central Illinois down to Metro East near St. Louis. Nikki Budzinski, who is a political flack for Pritzker and then was leveled up to be a political flack for Biden and now has come back to play, what? She's a Democrat Socialist. Class Envy Politics, that's her close. Take a listen.
Times are tough, especially if you work for a living. But Regan Deering's a wealthy heiress who inherited millions and just doesn't get it. Deering wants to slash the Social Security and Medicare you paid into, cutting the retirement benefits you earned. Regan Deering's not for us.
I'm Nikki Budzinski, and I grew up middle class. And the only thing I inherited was my mom's common sense. I approve this message because I've spent my life fighting for working people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what's fun about that ad? Well, there's a few things that are fun about that ad. But the first one is, times are tough. Why are they tough, Nikki? Because of the policies of the people that you work for and are now running to emulate. But okay, that's just my quick take on it.
And I love, like, if you work for a living, what?
Yeah, well, right.
Because most of us are sitting at home eating bonbons.
Yeah, and her working for a living, right. This is somebody who is under a ethical cloud right now. We talked about this the last time Regan Deering was on the show because of this $500,000 at least she made in quote-unquote consulting fees after she left government, and she won't sort of disclose the nature of this compensation. So here's somebody that, you know, feasted off the taxpayers to be a political operative in government, then turns around and gets sweetheart deals from the insiders in government, and then's going to lecture other people about working for a living after the policy she promotes has made it more difficult for people working for a living to make a living. Okay, sure. No sale. For a closing argument in response, we're pleased to be joined again by Republican nominee for Congress, Regan Deering. Regan, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I couldn't have unpacked that commercial better myself.
Well, you know, that's what I do. But you're.
But enough about him. What do you think of him?
Well, your closing argument, though, and I mean, you know, it can be in response to that, or it can be in complete. You could completely dismiss it. But the class envy politics that the left likes to play. I wonder how that plays in Southern Illinois, Central and Southern Illinois.
Well, I think that it's a narrative that we have commented on as the hypocrisy, because Nikki Budzinski worked for probably the most prominent heir in Illinois and, quite frankly, across this country in J.B.
Right.
Pritzker.
Right.
So you know, if she is saying that as a wealthy heiress, I'm unable to relate to the people, then surely Governor Pritzker is even more disconnected from the hardworking families in Illinois. You know, my husband and I are living in central Illinois. We understand the concerns, you know, facing everyday Americans. We're working and raising our family, and we have been for years. So we understand, and that's why I want to go to Washington, is bring those same values and needs of the people in my community there, whereas Nikki Budzinski is running to bring, you know, Washington's agenda back here to central Illinois. And people can see right through that. We are working so hard, traveling throughout this 13th congressional district, meeting people every day on the trail and talking about, you know, common sense solutions and the real world experiences that I've had, whether that's working in schools, owning my own small business, you know, advocating for low-income families in my community, you know, showing up at my school board meetings. And so I am relating to the people every single day in my own life, and that's what we need in our elected representatives, a true representative to go and advocate for families in central and southern Illinois, and that's what I intend to do.
But why did you decide to run? What was your aha moment? Not to sound like Oprah, but I just did sound like Oprah. But what was it?
Well, I think that, you know, for me, it was coming out of COVID and knowing that I had an opportunity to show up and advocate for my kids getting back in school. You know, I have two girls in public school and was standing up at my school board meetings when they were talking about what the return to learn plan looked like. And we all knew that our students needed to be in school. They needed to be getting that quality education. We needed to take the necessary precautions, but that we wanted our kids to be in school. And so the government overreach was just so apparent, and the pressure put on our local school boards worked. And I know that I joined a number of parents who stood up and said, we're not going to stand for this. You know, we want to be able to advocate for our kids. We know what's best for our children. And I think that knowing we had an opportunity to push back on that government overreach, and in court, Governor Pritzker lost his right to force masks on kids in school and eliminate them from school if they were exposed, felt like a win for the people. And I had so many people come to me afterwards and say, thank you. Thank you for putting your name to that. Thank you for standing in the gap for us parents. You know, people couldn't for a variety of reasons, whether they're a small business owner or maybe worked in the school. But knowing I had an opportunity to really represent the people that had similar interests to mine, really, I think, is what motivated me.
And so when you go to Congress, the policies that were promulgated by, well, under the recommendation of the public health authorities that were adopted in toto by COVIDian politicians like Pritzker, do you want to see a reckoning? You know, we've got this discussion going on because of this piece in The Atlantic by Emily Oster talking about whether or not we should have pandemic amnesty and just let bygones be bygones and differences of opinion be differences, you know, let that all subside and let's just move on and pretend the last 3 years didn't happen. And I think there's more of an appetite for some accountability from people in Washington, D.C. that were so influential and people at the state and local level before people can move on and, you know, can't we all get along again?
Well, I think you're right in that this country was built on freedom and we can't forget that. And during the pandemic and during the government overreach and the lockdowns and the staying home, there was a lot of loss of freedom. And we all experienced this COVID pandemic at the same time. A lot of uncertainty at the beginning, you know, a lot of wanting to make sure that we were protecting the most vulnerable and taking the right steps. But the prolonging of it and, you know, the destruction of sort of the American way of life as a result, I feel does need some accountability, and we need to make sure that we don't endure something like this again. And, you know, Congress has a role in that, and I, you know, I intend to have a seat at the table.
You know, something else too, just going back to this this business of your business, your family, you know, the connection you have to ADM. You know, I think it seems to me we also need people. I mean, Nikki Budzinski is a political operative. That's how she's survived and to some extent apparently recently thrived, her political connections. You know, you're connected to a business that provided thousands and thousands of jobs for generations of families, and you know, is part of the agribusiness community that feeds the world. And people are supposed to be ashamed of that. I think it needs to be presented to people. Say, wait a second. What are we supposed to celebrate? And what are we supposed to look with a jaundiced eye at? It seems to me political insider rent seeking kleptocrats is something we shouldn't be celebrating. And people that create businesses and improve the quality of life for millions of other people, we should be celebrating. Is that so difficult to argue?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm proud of where I'm from, and, you know, I've been honest about who I am and what I intend to do, you know, with the resources that I have. And I have always been a servant throughout my career. And celebrating success is, you know, part of the American dream. We all want to be able to achieve, you know, better for ourselves and our children. And that's something that many of us, you know, throughout the country are working towards, is making sure that we have success. So I think that being an elected representative and a true statesman means that, you know, you are going to work for the people, and you use your experiences and you talk about your priorities, and you go to Washington and create good policy and, you know, spend our taxpayer dollars well. And then you come back home and you live by those rules that you have set. And yeah. So, you know, that's the reason that I'm going. You know, I know that I have been afforded experiences that maybe not everyone else has, but I'm never shying away from my family's success and the responsibility that I have to go and continue that that life of service.
All right, so we have 5 days left until the election. What's the game plan?
The game plan is get out and meet voters and earn their support. we have been working really hard throughout this entire campaign to make sure that we try and show up everywhere that we are asked, or that we see, you know, an opportunity to go and meet a variety of people, whether that's, you know, mayors or schools or chambers of commerce, churches, community groups, door knocking, phone calls. And so we will just continue that for these last 5 days, making sure that voters know who I am and what I'm about and why I want to go to Washington and represent them.
And by the way, on the whole family thing, you and I have something in common in addition to being conservatives. Both adopted. You're adopted, right?
Well, how about that?
Yeah.
Yes, it's actually National Adoption Month.
Yeah.
So
November. Yeah, November. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very interesting. Your family did better than my family did. But,
Dan.
You know, I mean, just, they just made a better choice. Better selection, you know. Yeah, you know. But no, that's a cool thing.
We both recognize, you know, having selfless mothers who gave us the gift of life,
exactly.
And parents who chose to adopt and love children in this world. So, you know, in Congress, I'm just going to continue to advocate for women and children, you know, making sure we have good funding and good resources for maternal care and adoption services. And that's a platform that I intend to celebrate. Absolutely.
Very good. Well, we're happy that you ran for office, and getting to know you over the last several months, because you're one of the more thoughtful conservative candidates to emerge in Illinois in a long time, as far as I'm concerned. That's my experience. That's my view. So we appreciate
it. Well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, I think that, you know, the state and the country is ready for elected officials, you know, that have just come from the sidelines. You know, we don't need to be crafted to have a political career. I certainly applaud those that have worked their way up and, you know, have worked on campaigns and know the ins and outs. It's been a very steep learning curve, I'll tell you that. And it's not for the faint at heart. But, you know, I have really enjoyed the experience, and I'm really looking forward to being the next Congresswoman in the 13th and going to work for the people.
We hope so. She is Regan Deering, Regan, R-E-G-A-N, for Congress, the number 4, reganforcongress.com. For more information, make a last-minute donation, get involved in her candidacy, her campaign in the last 4 days, 5 days here. Regan, for Congress.com. Regan Deering, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan and Amy. Have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Everybody get out and vote.
Okay, will do, and thank you so much. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I met our next guest a couple of years ago when we both spoke at a Lincoln Day dinner in Lake County, Indiana. And I had a feeling we'd be hearing her name again in the near term. I had a feeling she'd be candidate for high office. Very sharp, very good speaker. Enjoy talking with her, and now we get to talk to her again. We've been looking forward to having her on the program. She is Jennifer Ruth Green. She is the Republican nominee for Congress in Indiana 1, Northwest Indiana, right across the border there where, you know, a good percentage of Illinois expats live. And she's poised to stage an upset in Northwest Indiana in a seat that's been long held by Democrats because of the Democrat stronghold that is Lake County, Indiana. She's Jennifer Ruth Green. She joins us now. Jennifer, thanks for being with us. Thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
I do remember the first time we met at that Lincoln Day dinner because you had an all-day golf excursion.
Yes.
Like, oh, man, I got a little burnt today.
Yes.
I was like, oh, he looks, you know, uncomfortable.
You're right. I was. You're right. I forgot about that. I was like a flashing red light. Yeah, exactly. That's right. I forgot about that.
You went on and you did your speech and it was great and standing ovation and yeah, you didn't appear uncomfortable at all.
Oh, very good. Thank you so much for your kind words. So, military background. Tell us about since we haven't had a chance to talk to you. I know a lot of people listening in Northwest Indiana know it, but for those who don't, you know, tell us why you decided to do this and where the campaign stands as you're really making a run that we haven't seen in that district in a long time.
Yes. So it's been an exciting journey. We met on May 25th, 2021, and that was the first speech that I'd ever given at anything GOP related, and felt a burden to run for Congress just to be able to help our country get back in the right direction. I remember February 4th, 2020, seeing the State of the Union address and watching in great disgust as Speaker Pelosi tore up the State of the Union address. And I remember thinking if she understood the human cost of war, she would conduct herself differently. And I remember thinking that here she is clearly conveying weakness to our international adversaries. And they're going to come look at that and say, America's weak and it's a time to attack them. And I thought, you know what? If these people are going to attack because of your antics, it's not your life that's on the line. It's my life as a military member and the lives of people who wear the uniform alongside me, who are going to have to be combating as other countries try to engage with us after those kind of actions. And so it just really just disgusted me. And I said, we have to do something better. And that was the initiative. That was the prompt. And that was the moment that I said, you know, we need people who understand the human cost of war in the place where war will be declared. Constitutionally, it's Congress. And I just felt that we need people who serve. And I looked at the stats and found that fewer than 18% of people in Congress had worn the uniform. And I just said, we have to change that. So that was the impetus. But then as time has continued, I began to see several things that we needed to focus on. The botched withdrawal of Afghanistan, ultimately the weakness on an international stage, the Putin invasion of the Ukraine, China's continued aggression regarding Taiwan. And I just said, internationally, these things are continuing to be true because of this weakness that's portrayed by this current administration. And then we saw everything else, gas, groceries, and grandkids. People have to make a choice between gas and groceries when they get up in the morning. And they also have to recognize that Congressman Frank Mervan is spending their grandkids' money. And so everything I hear about, my pension is going down 20 to 25%. I have to work longer. I don't know where how I'm going to make ends meet. I have a job. I have a full-time job, but yet I still have to go to the food pantry to close the end of the month out. And those kind of things are the America that people want to get a pat on the back for and say, let's reelect the same leadership. And it's a failure. And these are the things that we have to do better. Hoosiers deserve better, and they believe we're going to bring it to them. In 6 days, we're going to bring home a victory because they understand that.
I told you she's good. Gas, groceries, and grandkids, very good. I like that. That's a great handle.
Very good. Frank Mervan, all these commercials, I mean, they're flooded in the Chicago, Northwest Indiana area, saying that if you're elected, you're going to take manufacturing jobs to China.
Pot kettle.
I know.
You know, that's exactly the thing they did. You know, steel is our industry here. We have 27% of the nation's steel that comes from this area. And Congressman Frank Mervan is leader of the Steel Caucus, which may I remind the audience, the Steel Caucus is like a club. just like the Glee Club. It does not have any administrative authority. It does not have any legislative authority. It is a group of people who are interested. And the most you can do is band together and put a note together and say, hey, we represent 700,000 people, each of us, and there are 25 of us who are mad. And you can get a letter to the president's desk. It still holds power, but let's not kid ourselves. And so he has never once bucked President Biden. He has never once said, hey, the EU deal where you're using steel as leverage in the European Union negotiations, that's going to hurt us. The fact that the President Trump had tariffs that were based on blanket tariffs against Chinese steel, and the fact that he wants to roll them back to make quota tariffs, that's what he did. And Congressman Mervan and the steel caucus said nothing. And so if he wants to say that he is focused on national security or that he's focused on steel, pot kettle, because he has done nothing.
Maybe the Glee Club should replace that steel club. The something
it'd be a lot more enjoyable with the noise.
Yeah, I was sure the singing. Yeah, your service in the Air Force and in theater in Iraq. Something very wrong happened to you in this campaign just a few weeks ago. The release of a part of your personnel file that involved you being sexually assaulted, which should not have been released, and the Air Force admitted it shouldn't have been released. But how was your opponent involved in bringing something that was a private matter that you did not want to make public? How was he involved in bringing this public?
Sick.
So I'll give you a quick timeline. So essentially what happened was Congressman Frank Mervan got frontlined, DCCC frontlined, and so basically that's the vulnerable Democrat list. And that means that they're going to layer your campaign. They're going to take care of every communication. They're going to make sure that they know exactly what you're doing. They're going to push you to fundraise because, after all, they have to limp you along. So he got frontlined, just intermingled with the DCCC. And then what happened was March 23rd, due diligence, a DCCC Oppo research firm requested my records from the Air Force. Somebody in the Air Force leaked my entire personnel record from 2000 to 2018. April 1st is when the response came to Due Diligence. That was the firm's name. And then Due Diligence, who is intertwined with my opponent because he's on the frontline list, they took it and they pitched it to several media outlets. Politico is the one who told us that. Politico said, hey, we're gonna splash this on the front page. And so we said, please don't do that, because you only have half the story. You have an allegation of misconduct, and you have my sexual assault. And they said, if we don't do it, someone else will, implying and letting us know that other people had this information as well. And then we corroborated that after the fact when other people were commenting with information from my personnel file. But the thing was, they only had half the story. They just had the allegation against me, specifically saying I was sexually assaulted and all these things were wrong as a failed officer. But what they don't know is that I rebutted that with the Air Force and took many years and shared reports on the ground from my leaders who were there, who said, I never questioned Jennifer Ruth. I was here at the event. What happened was wrong. This is what happened, blah, 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 blah. Settled with the Air Force. I've since been promoted twice, currently serving as a lieutenant colonel, just finished a command tour, one of 14 commanders on the base out at the 122nd Sutherland. And the Air Force and I had already settled it. But the fact that these people didn't know means they didn't do all their research, or that they didn't care, or that they just wanted to try to smear me. And so at the end of the day, the Dems tried to smear me. And if Congressman Frank Mervan, he went online and said he had nothing to do with it. And every single ad he's done has been coordinated with the DCCC. And so for him to act as if he had nothing to do with it, sure, he may not have pressed send to send an email to reporters, but that's exactly what happened. We have dates, we have people. And then if you think about it, if he says I had absolutely nothing to do with it and the DCCC did it all, well, then you don't know who's running your campaign and you don't know who's running our district. Either case is a failure of leadership.
And so, I mean, has this boom? I can't imagine how this has not boomeranged on him in district. The exploiting a sexual assault. I can't imagine this is being received well by your voters.
People are fired up. But you know what? I've heard that people have, you know, The news said that people have been threatening his family, and for that I sincerely apologize. I just pray for them, because no one wants their lives to be threatened or their family's lives to be threatened, but people are upset, and I pray that he would have safety, and I pray that The emotional pain of his mistake would end quickly. But I believe that voters and people in general are holding him accountable for it all across the nation because they see the gravity of this failure.
So what's the the gravity of the failure is a good phrase. What's the state of play now? I mean, this, but before Mervan's new as a congressman, it was Visclavsky for a long time, but it's always been in Dem hands, at least as far as back as I can remember. You'll know the history better. So sure. So what's happening on the ground now? How is it different this time?
You know, 92 years is how long it's been.
Oh my God!
And we've seen, like you said, people have come from Illinois, bringing conservative values. And really, at the very beginning, Attorney General Todd Rokita is the one who helped us to kick it off in the region. We had other leaders, Congressman Jim Banks, but Attorney General Rokita was the one who said, "Hey, like, we're backing Lake County, and we're here." And so he came through, and he really helped, and he fired up a lot of people on our behalf. And so I am forever grateful for that. But we've seen that influx of people come in from Illinois. We've also seen that. People, we've made this race not about Republicans or Democrats. We've made this race about Jennifer Ruth Green versus Congressman Frank Mervan and good ideas. If you feel you are better off today than you were 2 years ago, then continue to elect Congressman Frank Mervan. But I would argue for many reasons we can't continue to afford to elect him. And so that's just it. It's just a referendum on his lack of attention in this district. And because we've outraised him for three consecutive reporting periods, we have the opportunity to share our message. We have billboards. We're targeting the Spanish. We're targeting the Spanish population, the African-American populations, faith-based populations, the laborers. I've had the opportunity to get into labor unions, our labor union halls, and talk to them about what we're doing. And we're continuing to see support. And so it's incredibly encouraging to me. Polls look encouraging to me. And we are very, very excited to bring home a win in 6 days because we are going to bring Hoosiers better than Congressman Frank Mervan has provided them.
I love it. Jennifer Ruth Green, she's the Republican nominee in Indiana 1 in Northwest Indiana, Lake County. And it'd be great to have a woman in uniform in Congress with a focus on the state of our military readiness, particularly with all the conversations we've had with Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano about the lack of it at this point. Jennifer Ruth Green, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck on Tuesday. Great job.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.